Okay, let's get started.
Oh, wait, just a minute, partner.
No.
Guess again, freak boy.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
AudioTU.com. Another fresh picked pod from AudioTU.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 58 of Shutters Inc., the first one for 2007. Shelton Muller.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
Hey, Bruce.
All that sort of stuff.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. It seems so long ago now. Yeah. How many more sleeps till the next one?
I don't want to think about it.
No, that's true.
Did you have a good Christmas and New Year?
Very quiet, just did very little, sat around and played the guitar, brushed up on my blues techniques, and did very, very little, had, you know, late breakfasts. We went away to a very quiet part of Victorian countryside and did very little for a few days,
right,
except catch up with family and, you know, and chill, which was really good.
I'm trying to imagine a Shelton Muller blues track. It'll be something like, ba-ba-na-na-na, my wife gone left.
I wish I had that camera back.
So you had a good Christmas. That's good.
Yeah. And you went north to Queensland, where the weather was not to your favour.
It was pretty ordinary, actually. Yeah.
You should have come down to Victoria, mate. Yeah. We had gorgeous weather down here.
I said to Kath when we got home, I said, I'm sure we're living in the northern hemisphere and nobody's told us, because the further south we came, the hotter it got.
Mm.
You know, we left the Gold Coast where it was, you know, mid-20s centigrade, for those American listeners. I'm sorry, I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit, but we got down to Port Macquarie, which is like 5-6 hour drive south, and it was 30 degrees, and by the time we got back to Sydney, which is another, you know, 5 hours south, it was 40 degrees.
Yeah.
Just crazy.
Good heavens.
Anyway,
I went and saw An Inconvenient Truth yesterday.
It's
fabulous. If you don't understand the concepts of global warming, it's very well explained. And if you don't believe that it's an issue,
this will change your mind.
Go and see this.
Yeah.
You wonder what would have happened had Al Gore become the president.
Yeah.
Because he is so concerned about the issues that the present administration there doesn't seem to be concerning itself with overtly.
Mm.
But I only mentioned it because, not that I want to get into politics, but only because, you know, your discussions on weird weather patterns. I mean, I know that in the United States they've had very little winter, you know, and here we are in January.
Is that
I remember
right?
living in in Canada as a kid. I remember apparently in Edmonton, I've got friends there, and they were saying that it's, you know, very cold, but I understand in a lot of the northern hemisphere it's nowhere near as cold or as snowy as it should be.
Really?
And watching this movie yesterday, for those of our listeners who haven't seen it, go and see it. It really indicates just the dire straits into which we've got ourselves, and it's very, very eye-opening. At the end, I must give him a lot of kudos, because a lot of these documentaries talk about the disasters that face mankind and then give very little hope for them.
Right.
But he actually says, look, you know, we can make a difference and we can do it. We've done it before.
Yeah.
And we should be concerned, and it's all based on you, the individual. And it's very, very good. But his material and his presentation of it is excellent. But I just thought I'd mention it because I saw it yesterday in your discussion of weird weather patterns all over Australia. I mean, the further north you go, the further hotter it should get, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
But summer in Queensland can tend to be a little tropical. So maybe you just got there at a bit of a bad time.
Yeah.
I would say so.
But anyway, late last year, I got to go to a media preview for Who Killed the Electric Car?
Yes, I want to see that. Is it good?
Which is a must-see. That was just amazing, you know. And it's interesting because in the last week, GM have announced that they are actually bringing back a hybrid electric, which they expect to see on the roads by the end of this decade. So, but I remember when I went and saw that, one of the guys that I work with, he said to me, oh, if you enjoyed that, you'll really want to see An Inconvenient Truth. But I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but I do definitely want to see it. So.
Yeah, well, I want to see yours. So is it out? I'll have to I haven't seen it advertised here yet.
I don't know. It's probably available on DVD by now, because it, you know, it certainly wasn't going to run for weeks and weeks at the cinema like, you know,
no,
a Pixar animation would. But
well, I mean, look, a carburetor for burning water was designed in about 1932 and patented. You know,
is
but
that
can you imagine
right?
the world economy? Yes, oh, absolutely. We've had carburetors for you know, water-based carburetors for decades, but you can imagine what would happen and what the world economies would be had we decided to adopt it.
Yeah,
we would have had fewer wars probably as well.
You know, one of the things they raised in you know, Who Killed the Electric Car, they said, you know, they estimate that there is still around about 1 trillion barrels of oil left to be, you know, brought out of the ground and out of the beds of the seas. Whoa. And at $100 a barrel, that's $100 trillion worth of business still to be done, so that no one wants the system to change in a hurry. Well, it's certainly not those with vested interests anyway.
So isn't that just typical of humankind?
We'll,
you know, we have one planet to live on, let's destroy it so we can make some money.
Screw the consequences, let's make a buck.
The art of stupidity remains highly developed. Anyway,
it reminds me of an old one of the old Indian chiefs, like one of the American Indian chiefs, I can't remember which one it was, made this great comment, and forgive me if I misquote it, but it was something along the lines of, only when all the fish have been fished from the rivers and the seas, and only when all the trees have been cut down and all the lands have been cleared, will the white man realize that he cannot eat money.
Yeah, that's true. Paul Gowder, one of our listeners, would probably be well up on that verse, wouldn't you, Paul?
Probably.
Paul does a lot of, a lot of photography of First Nations people. I believe
that's what
we call them now. When I was in Canada a few years ago, that was the term being adopted. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's a fabulous term.
So you no longer First Nations refer to them as Native peoples. Americans. Is that what you say?
Or Native Americans,
Right.
Indians, of course, is that's for John Wayne to
say,
you know.
Sorry.
Yeah.
No offense intended.
No. I wasn't giving you stick there, mate. No.
But I meant for our listeners. I meant no offense by referring to them as Indians. I should have said Native Americans, but. Yeah.
Well, when people say Indian to me, I usually say, "What do you? Which one do you mean, dot or feather?" You know, because there's two different kinds.
So
it's better to just say dot or feather. You know, dot or feather. And no offense to either group. We love you all. We love
Absolutely.
You all. God made many colors. Thank heavens
for that.
Let's just
start talking photography before we offend anyone else.
Yeah, that's right. We'll see our listener rate just drop off to about, you know, 0.7%. No, we weren't trying to offend anybody. We love everybody here at Shutters, Inc.
Absolutely
everybody. Unless, of course, you know, you don't like photography, in which case, get off my podcast.
So what are we going to talk about?
Well, you know, finally we should get down to talking about photography.
Hello,
everybody.
Should.
Here we are. Yeah, well, it's our first kickoff podcast, so we're allowed to pontificate just a little, blather on and stuff. But I thought that one thing we've never talked about is the art of perspective and viewpoint in terms of, you know, creating a concept or a notion of three dimensions, when really we only have, you know, two to work with. We have, you know, up and down, up and down and across, and really that's our frame. But what we really want to do in order to engage the viewer is try to make it as involving as we possibly can our images. And one of the ways that we do that is to create the notion of perspective. In other words, distance, scale, placement. We do this by composition, of course. But one of the ways that we can do this is by perspective. Perspective indicates dimension and space in a picture. And it usually, if we're talking, you know, technically, perspective will usually refer to some point, a distant point in the image at which all the lines converge and meet. If you've ever done, you know, graphics, that would be vanishing points. Are one of the first things you probably would learn, I would imagine. And the vanishing point is the point way off. It could even be outside the frame, and often is outside the frame, at which, you know, lines within the frame of buildings or fences or roads or whatever lead to. And each vanishing point represents a dimension. So if you have one vanishing point, let's say, for instance, you're photographing the side of a building, and that's all that you really see in the image. You would have one vanishing point. And if even if it led out of the frame, it still means that you basically have, you know, one dimension in the image as such. If you have two vanishing points, let's say you photographed the building, but you had two sides. So you photographed the front, let's say you're standing maybe at a 45-degree angle to the building, and you photograph the front and the side. And then you have two vanishing points, one going off to the right, one going off to the left. And because, you know, your vanishing points would be well outside the frame, but nonetheless you'll see the lines of the top and bottom of the building, you know, converging down towards a distant vanishing point. That's two dimensions. It is possible or to get three. And what I'll actually do is send some images that highlight the difference between a one-point perspective, a two-point perspective, and a three-point perspective in an image. Let's say you walked past, you photographed the same building, and you photographed it so that it included say you could see the top of it. Well, you'd have, you know, the vanishing point going off to the left, you'd have a vanishing point going off to the right, but you'd have a vanishing point going upward as well. If you pointed your camera up at this building, you'd have a vanishing point of both sides going up also, and so you'd have a three-point perspective. What I've got is I've got some illustrations that we'll put up on audiotu.com. You can see the difference. Now, why should that interest us? Well, no one is saying that a one-point, a two-point, or a three-point perspective is, you know, that either are greater than the other. A lot depends on how you wish to, you know, convey your subject. But we should be at least conscious of what they do and how they create a greater idea of a three-dimensional reality in a two-dimensional frame. So I'm going to, like I say, send some images. One's a picture that I took in Egypt that shows all three vanishing points, you know, and also the and gives you an idea of why that image, you know, has those. I've got arrows, and also you'll see when I get it up there. And you know, I won't talk about it because, you know, I'm only going to say 1,000 words. The picture will say, and some illustrations as well. But these are very, very important. Vanishing points can be very important in conveying dimensions. You know, giving someone an idea of scale and size and thickness and what and height and all those things in what is just otherwise a two-dimensional image. Another way that we can convey dimension is what's called linear perspective. Linear perspective would be, can you imagine, for instance, think of a row of houses, a marching line of soldiers, palings in a fence, even perhaps... Telephone poles beside a road, yep. Exactly. That's what we call diminishing perspective. And if we employ those in our images, we also give...
So is diminishing perspective the same as linear perspective?
No, in the sense that you're using really objects that are of similar or same size, but because they go off in the distance, they look smaller in the frame. Right. So it's not, say, one object which has, you know, a vanishing point off in the distance, but rather a whole row of objects, all the same size, but you give an idea of distance because they become smaller in the frame. Right.
Yep.
You can exaggerate that, of course, by using various lenses. By using a wide-angle lens, that line becomes smaller more quickly.
Yeah,
a telephoto lens will
compress, you know,
do the very opposite. Exactly. So we have an option to change that reality using the optics of lenses, but it's a great way of giving the photographer the tools to say, hey, this is how I wanted you to see it. This is my take on it in terms of scale and size. I have a photograph I took many years ago of a man looking through a telescope. He's sort of dressed up in his naval costume. I took it at some tourist village, and he's looking through a telescope, and at the very front of the image, and I'll send this one along as well, is the front of the telescope, and then, you know, it goes back to him to give you an idea of the perspective and the distance. It's exaggerated using a wide-angle lens, but it gives you an idea of this diminishing, you know, perspective that helps us to create three dimensions in only two. Another example of perspective, which many of our landscape photographers would know, is aerial perspective. And have you ever seen photographs of mountain ranges that are layered And they're usually, you know, the Rangers are represented usually in these blue sort of tones. And the foreground, the closest mountains, are usually a very dark color. And the layers behind recede in terms of depth of color and saturation, showing, you know, the distance. As the mountains become paler in the blue, as it were, you get a sense of distance as, you know, the mountains recede into the haze. That's also a very clever way of indicating distance using, you know, landscape. You can do it with mountain ranges, of course, but as anything recedes off into the haze, the normal UV haze, you get an idea of distance. So aerial perspective is what that's called, and it works very effectively. You can also suggest depth and perspective by using, you know, naturally selective focusing and minimal depth of field. The mind assumes that sharply defined objects are placed at a distance from out of focus objects. That's basically the way it works. And it works very well in terms of, well, linear perspective. If you were to use all the depth of field, your shot would look different to if you maybe just highlighted on one fence paling using minimal depth of field and let the others go out of focus. That can be a very, very powerful way of not only showing distance or and scale and size, but also, you know, creating a sense of distance, a greater sense of distance between each object by, you know, minimizing your depth of field, or perhaps less distance by maximizing your depth of field. So when we're taking photographs and we want to convey an idea of scale and distance, there are so many tools at our
disposal,
our toolbox, as it were, our disposal, that we can use to do that. The idea behind, of course, making this successful is to combine as many of those tools in the one photograph as possible. Our depth of field, you know, what focal length lens we're going to use, how close we are to the subjects. For instance, if you were photographing a fence, would you come around and photograph it from the front, or would you get right up next to the fence and photograph along the side? How you do that, where you place yourself in terms of, you know, a distance from the subject, what lens you use, your depth of field, as I say, can dramatically alter how that subject looks and the level of dimensionality, if that's a word, in your image. I see so many photographs that, you know, are not, that do not employ, you know, our vanishing points, depth of field, in, you know, optical dynamics of lenses, and what is, you can see the photographer has an idea, but he just hasn't known how to use the tools available to him to make that idea come across. And vanishing points and perspective, such as, you know, these tools, are very important and can be very effectively used in almost every kind of photography we do, not just landscape, but travel, portrait, wedding, all sorts of photography that we do can use these techniques to create, you know, three dimensions in, as I say, what we have at our disposal, which is really two. And if we don't use them, we're really ripping ourselves off. We're not giving the viewer, you know, a greater sense of scale and size and dimension. So I just thought I'd discuss those today. What I'll do is send some images along, and there's a discussion of it, of course, also at our photo.blorge.com website that you can also look at too, which is our total image sort of hints and tips website for photographers. So, but I'll send some images along to audiotu.com, because that's where our listeners are usually going.
Yep.
So give you an idea of what exactly we're talking about. So check that out when the moment you hear this podcast, so that you get a visual idea in terms of the illustrations and also photographs that have used those, you know, what we've talked about today. You can see how you can employ them in your pictures.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Sheldon.
My pleasure. I'm feeling a bit rusty today, I must admit. I'm going to have to get into the swing of this thing because, you know, we've all been on holiday. Yeah. You know, hopefully your sound settings are right too, mate, because you've had a bit of a holiday too.
I have.
It's probably like riding a bike for you, is it?
Well, it is a little bit. Although I must admit, though, I do start to miss it when I go away on holiday for a while.
Yeah.
You know, I sort of, you know, 3 or 4 weeks in, if I have a long holiday, like, you know, 3 weeks into it, I'm starting to, you know, geez, I'm missing, you know, recording and mixing something. So,
yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. Well, I missed everybody, and I thank you for your emails while we've been away. Thank you for keeping us up to date and for your continuous ideas on what we can talk about. We do pay very much attention to them, but thanks for keeping us in touch, all those who emailed us over the break, and we very much appreciate it, because nice to know we haven't lost you.
And just an update, I have come back from my holiday, and guess what? No Gorillapods, so I'm going to have to chase that up again. Must admit, this has been a very disappointing exercise.
Yes.
But I shall get in touch with my contact once again and find out what's going on, and hopefully get some information to those people who were announced as winners months and months and months ago, exactly what's going on. So
I don't understand it. I don't understand
very,
it at all.
Very disappointed. But anyway, what can I do?
Great product.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Certainly, well, we'll get it organized.
Let down on this end. But anyway. All right, matey, we will talk with you next week then.
Terrific, mate. Nice to be back, everybody. And we'll keep in touch for sure.
Absolutely. See you, mate.
Thanks, buddy. See ya.
You've been listening to another Fresh Picked Pod from audiotou.com. Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable.
You be the boss.
Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear it.
Hey, now that's a good idea.
AudioToYou.com. Hit us today.
And remember,
Control-V to bookmark.
AudioToYou.com.